going deep. I feel like Kalo on the Miami Heat. The words I speak off this sheet are like a three-peat. I don't just hop on a track, I bring running cleats. I'm a player for real, more than an athlete. Let my mama tell it, could have ran for the Senate. Instead I penned it for Donovan Bennett. I'm cemented, this a deep dive. In your headphones or a long drive, up close and personal, just like you courtside. There ain't no out of bounds here, no offsides. We going live in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You are now tuned in to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
That's right, it is the Going Deep podcast, and a very special edition of the Going Deep podcast. If you've been listening for a long time, thank you. But you may remember that we've had a couple We Eaten series before where it is exactly what it sounds like. I sit around a table and consume some good food with some interesting people in the world of sports. And this one might be one of the best, if not the best, because of the cast of women I got together to share experiences and best practices. And that would be not the only, but some of the real formative women who have brought women's professional sports domestically here in Canada. One would be Diana Matheson, the founder of the Northern Super League. It is her baby and her idea. It doesn't exist without her. That can also be said about Jaina Hefford, the executive vice president of hockey operations. She led the now PWHL players, many of them, in the Dream Gap Tour, making sure that they could build momentum and learnings to get to a point that they are now where they have a professional and sustainable hockey league right here in the country. And last but not least, Teresa Resch, who is the president of the Toronto Tempo, the first WNBA franchise outside of the United States, and thus obviously the first in Canada. So I met up with them at Bar Mordecai, one of my favorite spots here in Toronto. And Dundas, it's close. You definitely should go and consume. Just to have an open and candid conversation about how we got in essentially three successive years, three strong sports leagues and franchises in the country that women now can aspire to be a part of in many different facets, but also what are the continued pain points and hurdles in the landscape, and how does Canada compare to other developed nations in terms of women's sport and women's professional sport more broadly. Let's go deep with Teresa Resch, Jaina Hefford, and Diana Matheson as we eat in at Bar Mordecai.
Hello, welcome to Bar Mordecai.
Hi, Chef.
Hello.
Hi. My name is Maria. I'm the head chef of Bar Mordecai, and I'm here to present some of the dishes that we prepare in this kitchen. We're going to start with the salad. We have some fresh radicchio and endives. You can have the earthiness of the beets, the sweet of the oranges, and the crunchiness of the pecan candies, and it goes, blends well with the creaminess of the labneh. Next is cornichon with the squash puree, some thyme, some mint and cilantro, flowers, and some chili peppers. The sweet potato that is roasted. We have some shata aioli, some fresh radishes and chives. And lastly, we have the kofta, that is chicken, and it has the crispiness of the fryams, that is the top, the colorful crispiness there.
Look beautiful. Delicious.
Okay.
Thank
Enjoy.
You so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming by. dig in, don't wait. It's instructive, I think.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah. Let's go for it. It looks great.
I'll dig into the big guy.
Please do.
Part of my reach.
Yeah. I'll switch you.
I feel like it's instructive. We are at a female-owned restaurant with a female chef, because I feel like in many spaces where women necessarily haven't always been welcomed or taken the lead, they're now dominating, sports clearly being one. But why do you think we've seen that wave over the last couple of years?
I mean, I think generally we're a pretty progressive country, and it's taken us a while to get here on the sports side. You know, as Canadians, been watching women's sports in the U.S. for a while. When we look at the WNBA and the NWSL, and it's surprising it took us this long, but now I think, especially after the success of many of our female athletes at the international stage in the Olympics and World Championships, You know, Canadians have become fans, whether you think of Mary Fleet Poulin or Christine Sinclair, Kia Nurse. They've been icons in our country, and I think they're, you know, we're starting to open our eyes to what women's professional sport can look like.
I mean, it all takes time, right? So you think about, you know, I grew up in the States, and Title IX came into effect like 26 years ago now, and it takes time for those things to happen. So now what you have is the first generation, especially in the WNBA, you have the first generation of athletes that their entire lives the WNBA has existed. They've never known a world where the opportunity to play professional basketball was never an option. And I think that really changes how people view, you know, their future opportunities. And, you know, there's still only 144 players that are going to ever make the WNBA, but it still gives people hope and something to be aspirational about, which then just provides a much greater pathway for people to participate. And I think with that, you know, you have people, people that love and support these young girls getting caught up into it, and then they become fans of it. So it just takes time, and over time you've seen it all evolve. And I think the other thing that I think has really played a huge role in where we're at right now in women's sports is just how people consume it. You know, for a long time, what we watched and what we consumed is what other people decided. You know, broadcasters, programmers, they decided what we were fans of. But now, like, the options are endless, right? Between all the streamers, broadcasters. I mean, you look at the Olympics that were in Paris, like, you could watch every single sport that you wanted, whenever you wanted. It was accessible. Like, that was never the case, you know, until maybe 5 years ago. I don't even know if the last Olympics had that, but I know Paris did because I watched all kinds of sports.
Right. Switch it for the salad.
Yeah, switch.
That's a good trade.
There you go.
Jane, what's your experience been? Because I've always struggled with it historically, specifically in hockey, where we call ourselves the hockey nation. We call ourselves a progressive feminist nation. But there wasn't the same level of intrigue other than when we were playing for medal. Now, you've clearly debunked that over the last couple years. But why did it take so long to get to that point?
Well, I think, first of all, it's not easy. You know, what we've done over the last just over a year now, it's not easy to do, and it takes significant investment. And I think people had to change their minds into this being a business and it not being a charity. And so that's something that we've done, significant investment to get this off the ground. And now we're, you know, we're satisfying the demand that's out there for fans that want to see women's professional sport, and we've done it differently. And so I think it just, you got to put the product in front of them, but you've got to do it right.
You know what I just realized? I said that Title IX started 25 years ago. That's not true. That would have been 2000. It was 50 years ago.
50?
I think it was 1975. I'll have to fact check mine. But like, I just thinking about that as you were talking, like, no, that was the year I graduated from high school. Title IX was right. Well before that. Anyways, sorry, just correcting myself.
Yeah, I think the big, like, it seems like it's all happening at once right now, women's pro sport in Canada, but it is, I mean, to Teresa's point, 50 years plus in the making. I think there's no one answer, but it definitely has to do with culture being ready, finally, and especially, like, the way we were looking at a lot of social issues coming out of COVID.
You think COVID impacted it?
I think a lot of things shifted culturally during that time, and I think that helped for sure. I think WNBA players were leading the way in a lot of the conversations around social issues. I think the players in the NWSL, the US League, got a stronger voice during that time. I think there's also now, like, we've had generations of women that have come before us that have been kind of clawing their way into the rooms where decisions are made in media or sports. So, you know, they had to work their way in, and then it was kind of the next generation after them that was able to have a bit of a say. And so by the time we got here, when we're talking to companies or investors, there's actually women in the room now, which not that long ago there weren't, and it makes a huge difference, I think. And the biggest thing too, data. Like, when 5 years ago, there was basically no data around women's sport because there wasn't enough women's sport out there to get data, and no one was tracking it. So we had, you know, we had the CWHL, of course, we've had the WNBA, but, like, CWHL was basically a charity model more than anything. But that started to shift the last few years. There started to be data. Like 3-4 years ago, it was, what was the Sports Innovation Lab, the FAN project. That was one of the early ones from a former U.S. hockey player was behind that. And it showed, oh, there's an audience for women's sport that might be different than men's sport. And then we started to get more of that. We started to get really clear trend in women's soccer, where whenever you put women's professional soccer on broadcast television instead of on Twitch or Nowhere, or one time they tried Lifetime, that didn't work. But as soon as you put it on broadcast, the audience grows every year. So we could use data out of England, out of the US, which wasn't there 2-3 years before. And we could use data too on franchise value, that women's professional sport has the same business model as men's sport. Year-over-year profits for a professional sport team are quite hard. In men's too, actually 70% of men's professional soccer clubs lose money every year. And women were never allowed to lose money every year. But it's the team asset, that growing valuation, that grows every year. And we started to get data out of the NWSL, the US League, that showed owners bought in 2012 for $150,000, and then in 2022, average franchise value was $66 million. And Angel City just got new investors this past year that brought their franchise value to $250 million. So we had numbers that we could then bring to the market, which honestly, 3-4 years ago, there were no numbers out there for us to use to dispel any of the myths and biases around the sport. And now we can't keep track of the numbers, and it's really annoying because we have to change our pitch deck like every 2 weeks because of all the numbers.
Yeah, we're
all
getting so much data. It's incredible. And I think the point you made about the fandom around women's sports and how it's unique has really changed how people view the commercial opportunity around women's sports. That's taken a huge, huge leap forward in progress of how the fans are different. They're loyal, they're younger, they're more educated, they're more likely to engage with the brands that support the teams that they support. So now we just need these like really, really valuable fans to grow. So it's just a matter of getting the league and teams and women's sports, it's total just like greater exposure, because our fans are so, so invested and so valuable.
Talk about going into those rooms. Is it a blessing or a bit of a burden that in order for us to have, we have one of the best players to play the sport had to just do it herself. One of the best players that played the sport had to do it with the help of the current players, that you had to really make it happen, and it wasn't the infrastructure helping to make it happen?
Is it a blessing or a burden?
Yeah.
Both, but way heavier on the blessing side. I think I'm very lucky and fortunate that I retired at a time where the market and the culture was ready to do this in Canada. And timing is everything in a new business, you know, and it would have been real tough, I think, for PWHL to do what it did even 5-6 years ago. Same for me. And I happened to retire at the right time. Be able to go back to school for 2 years and then build a league in Canada because still no one had started it. It's a harder path, for sure. Like, we had to raise a lot of capital. We went the startup route, entrepreneurial, a lot of uncertainty, a lot of long days. There's always something, but every dollar into what we're doing and every decision is being made by an ownership group and a leadership group where they're making a decision, same for you guys, where they're making a decision that is specific and what is right for women's professional sport in this country. And for soccer, like, we're in this global landscape. There's dozens of other women's pro leagues. And most of the ways they got started was through men's soccer money. So the league added a women's league, or rich clubs added a women's club, or their soccer federation built a league. But it was men's soccer money that got the thing started. And there's still a lot of leagues and clubs around the world where it's men's soccer owners that are making decisions for women's soccer clubs. And a lot of them aren't yet making the best decisions. So we've got a harder road, but we get to control our own destiny. We're in control of what we're making. And in Canada, we're like, I think we don't see this in Canada. Canadians don't see it, but I think we get to experience more of the world in women's pro sport. And we have one of the best women's pro sport markets in the world. Like, the US is probably number one, but we're right up there. And especially after 2026, when Toronto Tempo is in market too, after this year when we're in market with PWHL, like, one of the best fan bases in the world. We get to control our own destiny at the beginning of an industry. Like, women's pro sport is still new, and we're getting in, and we get to shape the thing versus men in sport putting some money towards women's sport.
Well, I mean, the Canadian culture supports women, I think, just in
and
general.
And women's sport,
just
yeah.
like through, even, you know, just through government politics. Like, we always have a long way to go, but I think in general, very supportive of women. And now to see that transfer over to sport is going to be incredible, because there was never a team sport to ever cheer for until the PWHL launched. You know, I think that, like, there was other startup leagues before that, but in a real professional way, this is the first time Canadians have had a chance to really support women and people that are representing their country. So it's really exciting to see people step up, and I don't know, the fandom is incredible. I'm a season seat holder for the Scepters, season seat holder for AFC. Sorry, not for Ottawa D, but it's incredible. Like, the atmosphere there is so great, and I think, like, people just really want to support. I say over and over that I think we'll have way more season seat holder overlap with Scepters and AFC than we will the Raptors. You know, who knows? The data still isn't there, but that's what I'm projecting. So people just want to support women's sports. It's part of our culture. It's part of Canadian society that they want to uplift the women around them. So it's awesome that they have an opportunity now.
And I would just add to Diana's point around, we pride ourselves on being different. And I think coming with a player first lens, whether that's, you know, for us, the way we were formed through a players association and a vision of the players, or someone like Diana leading it, we're not afraid to be different, right? Like, you look at what's existed in the past, but we look at things differently, and you need both, I think, right? Because there's a lot of things as a player you don't understand on the business side. So you certainly need both. And in our case, we're really fortunate to have an incredible group of investors that have incredible success at the highest of levels. But we mix that with the vision and the creativity of how we see the game. I think it makes for something special.
It's interesting how it's staggered. Start now year two. Spring 2025, spring 2026. You have the war stories of starting first, but were there learnings? Have there been learnings from you guys on what was done in the hockey space?
Oh, absolutely. Are you kidding? We have a continual dialogue with the Scepters and the PWHL and the league side. There's so much we can learn from each other. I mean, it's different sports, but it's the same market. It's women's sports. We're trying to sell tickets. We're trying to sell merch. We're trying to get partnerships. There's so much to learn from each other. So what's great is that it's always been open. Like, every time I call, they answer. And we like to think we're doing the same in return. So it's been a great, great community to be part of, for sure. And it's also, you know, within the league, like, even the WNBA, I feel that all the team presidents on the other 13 teams, I guess 14 now with Portland, they've answered every call, they help out, they give me best practices. So there's definitely a thought of, you know, a rising tide lifts all ships. And we know that we're only as big as our, or as good as our weakest link. So we want to make sure everybody's feeling supported.
I think people would be surprised to hear that, because often when you have people coming from an equity deserving group, there's naturally a crabs in the bucket mentality where you feel like you have to compete against other people rather than collaborate. What has allowed you guys all to support and collaborate?
It's a core value of our group, and I think with theirs as well. And you know, even before our start, we were looking at the WNBA. It was a very mature league, and you know, the NWSL was somewhere in the middle of where we wanted to be. And so I just think it's being fans of each other and knowing that we're broadening the pot together, and our fans are similar. We run opposite seasons, which I think, you know, for us is a benefit. But I've always had this vision of, like, the Toronto women's sports fan that is, like, all three teams, right? The Scepters, the Tempo, and AFC. And how cool that is. It's going to be an incredibly loyal group of people.
I think, too, on that one, I think values and vision. I think women, as women's sport people, we have been, you know, we've experienced being excluded from sport in different ways, whether, you know, the team has second pick of facilities, or you don't have media coverage, or there's not a lot of women in leadership. We've seen that side of it. So I think there's an understanding we have to make sure there's room for everyone in sport that maybe hasn't felt traditionally as welcomed before.
Has the success that the PWHL has already had helped the conversations that you all had and helped?
Oh, absolutely. You know, you get the ball rolling. It's just keep it going, keep the momentum going. So people see what's happened with hockey and exceeded a ton of expectations on it. So now everybody's super, super bullish on what we can do, which is incredible, right? You want people to invest on potential, not on, you know, proven data. You want them to come on board with you and like find true partners who believe in the same thing that you do and are going to, you know, ride that wave with you. So yeah, absolutely. And I think like we're able to learn from them, and even the W, you know, it's 30 years. Like you said, you look to the W because they were an established product. Like that's one thing that we have the luxury of is it's an established league. It's not going anywhere. It'll actually mark its 30th year when we tip off in May of 2026. So the momentum is incredible. I mean, W was named the fastest growing brand in 2024. That's just not sports. That's every single brand. You know, it's bigger than, faster than Netflix, faster than Microsoft, like all those other companies out there you can think of. And that says a lot. I mean, but that also means that you're growing really fast, which means that there's a lot of things that could go off track when you're moving that fast. So we have to be very, very conscious of protecting that brand, protecting the identity of who we are as a team, make sure we're delivering, which can be really, really hard in a startup space. So the momentum is incredible, though.
It's all not easy, though, I imagine. There's, I'm sure, war stories that you all share. We might need shots for this part of the conversation, but what have the pain points been?
I mean, I don't like to dwell on them because there's so many great things happening, but the pain points are the things that have like held women's sports back for forever, right? So playing catch up, there's an established fandom around men's sports teams at 100 years old. We're starting from scratch. Like just exposure. Toronto Tempo, people never heard of that before, right? There's a large portion of the population just has never heard of the Toronto Tempo. But we're working on it. It takes time. Diana already kind of mentioned this. There's this different level of expectations that you're being judged on versus investing on potential. So you kind of have to like prove yourself before you get the investment, but you can't really prove yourself until you have the investment. So chicken and egg a little bit. You run into that all the time. But overall, like, yeah, there's going to be things that are hard, but there's so many positive things happening right now and so much positive momentum. I just try to like really lean into that. And there's going to be naysayers. There's going to be people that don't see the value in it. But then you just go and you find the people that are partners, the people that do see it, and get them on board. And the good thing is there's a lot of people like that out there now, whether it's fans, corporate Canada, broadcasters. Like there's a lot of people now who see the value because of all the things that have happened in the marketplace. So get on the ship with them. Other people will stick in the background.
All right, let's go around the table.
Okay.
If there's one word.
One.
Yes. You'd want people to use when describing their experience and the relationship with your league or franchise, what would it be? I know it's tough.
That's hard. One word for a league that hasn't even kicked off yet. Okay, mine is going to be both boring and aspirational. And you can see I'm using lots of words to describe the one word, so it makes
sense. I thought
sense.
The words were boring.
I know, when you said
boring,
I'm like,
Okay, I'm going to go with, for fans to think of one word for the Northern Super League, I'm going to go partner. And the reason being, like, again, we're building from scratch. We have to get a fan base to recognize our team names and clubs and leagues from nothing. And the ones that are coming in now and the ones that are coming in these first few seasons are truly there from the very beginning of a brand new league, from day one of leagues that are going to be around for 100 years. And we get to build a lot of that with the fans, and we get their feedback. And I was talking about this the other day in soccer, because we're outside our venues, a lot of the atmosphere is driven by the fans. And I really want our fans to come in each market and help us build what they want that atmosphere to be. And that's, you know, songs and an atmosphere and something in Vancouver, but it's different in the Prairies, it's different in Quebec, it's different in Ontario, it's different in Atlantic Canada, and I want us to build that with us. So that was like 312 words to describe the word partner.
I like it. It wasn't boring. It made sense.
Great.
How about you, Jane?
I would say bold. Thinking about the history of how our league started, so like, you know, the courageous efforts of the players to stand up and and decide that they weren't going to just be satisfied with what currently existed and really push this forward. To how we launched, you know, most people thought not possible to launch in that amount of time, and we weren't afraid to be bold and say we're doing it and we're going to drop the puck January 1st, 2024. And then I think not being afraid to be different. We're trying to reinvent the way our fans see the game and the entertainment we put on the ice. So I think just generally just that willingness to be bold and be different and be a risk taker.
Thanks again to Jaina Hefford, Teresa Resch, Diana Matheson, and Bar Mordecai for hosting that conversation. Great time in the sports calendar, especially when you're looking at women's sport. The PWHL is in the playoffs. Make sure you're consuming, whether it's watching or getting out to a game if you're in the vicinity. The Northern Super League is now up and running, and after a couple standout weeks to start the year where it seemed like every franchise was posting massive numbers for attendance for the season opener, we're in a bit of a groove, and we're looking to sustain those high numbers. So, again, get out to a game or consume where you can via streaming or online. And then we are now less than a year away from the Toronto Tempo tipping, but we're also right at the beginning of the WNBA season as it tips once again. So certainly many of you Canadians are going to be Tempo fans, but you can cheer for the many Canadians playing in the league on various teams right now. That's it for me. If you want to cheer for us, make sure to like, favorite, share, and subscribe. We'll be back with more conversation. Talk to you soon.